Welcome to Mission Dharma. Thank you for coming out on this rainy evening. Our guest speaker tonight is Yvonne Ginsberg. We're very honored to have her back with us. She's been a friend of Mission Dharma for a long time. Yvonne has been practicing Vipassana since 1970, I think, early 70s. And she is a psychotherapist with practices in Marin and San Francisco. And for those of you that are regulars here, you already know her as she's spoken and joined us in meditation on many occasions. So welcome, Yvonne.
Oops. Thank you, David. Okay. I'm always tempted to say, good evening, like Alfred Hitchcock. So I was, in preparation for this evening, I was listening to some of the Dharma talks that are taped that you can get access to via the Mission Dharma website. And for some reason or other, I happened to land on the January 31st talk, which maybe some of you know, was Howie introducing the idea of a two-month rains retreat, which is a tradition in Asia. The months of February and March are the monsoon seasons in Asia. And typically people who are dedicated practitioners and most of the monks and most of the monasteries throughout all Buddhist countries take those 2 months to do intensive practice. And I noticed that Howie wanted to take that intensive tradition and bring it into Mission Dharma as part of our everyday life here in the Bay Area. And I'm just curious to know, you don't have to nod your heads or raise your hands or feel guilty, how many of you actually followed some of his suggestions, which were very light as well as lighthearted, to practice what he called the quickie meditation, which is maybe five times a day to do a three-minute retreat where you actually just allow yourself to be still, get in touch with the sensations of your body, being present with yourself, and then bring your awareness to the breathing. And then breathe mindfully from beginning to end of each breath and the space in between each breath. Just 10 times. And if you do that 10 times a day, that's 30 minutes a day. And if you do it 5 times, it's 15. But it's beneficial because it's regular and it establishes a practice. And you'll find that if you do that for an extended period of time, there is a naturally arising part of all of us that finds that little corner of stillness more regularly. And even uninvited, just as a gentle surprise. So I hope that some of you did follow through with that and spent the last 2 months doing a little bit of it. And if you didn't, that's fine. But now here we are, 10 days after the end of the rains retreat and in spring, in the springtime, and the turnaround time. So one of the interesting things that Howie mentioned when he was describing the rains and the Buddha's intention for establishing the two-month retreat as a tradition is, interestingly enough, I don't know if you remember, but I will remind you, that it's very, very wonderful to take a group of people out of the regular commerce of life. Even monks walk twice a day through the villages to gather the food that they're going to be eating for the day. Actually, once, they go in the morning. And then whatever they have in their bowl, that is their food for the whole day. And Howie reminded me that one of the reasons for bringing all of that activity back into that place of stillness and practice is that Every footstep that we take on this planet has an impact, especially when it's raining and the springtime is about to burst forth. There's all the little insects that come up to the surface so that they don't drown underneath in the earth. There's all the earthworms that come up. There's, in California, all the banana slugs and all the newly sprouted plants. Every footstep that we take crushes some of those creatures. God bless you. And the Buddha, too. And so the interesting thing about coming out of the rains and into the spring is the idea that from the darkest time, from the coldest time, from the time that the earth, really everything on the earth, reaches deep, 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 deep down into the most internal part of the earth, all of a sudden the rains come and there is rebirth. But the message that I got from listening to Howie was the understanding that our presence, our lives, are expensive to the natural order of things. A friend of mine once said many years ago that one of the things about the human species is that it is too successful. Meaning, we have practically conquered and taken over the planet and the natural cycle of things and had our impact on it, and some of it has been very, very destructive. Not just every footprint of each of us as individuals, but the air that we breathe, the energy that we need, the products that we can't live without. There's a sense of sacrifice that is attached and associated with every aspect of our being alive. And it's sometimes nice to remember that. I know that in the Buddhist tradition, we are invited to become aware, to become mindful of suffering, of our suffering. And we are encouraged to practice so that we become more aware of ourselves. But part of being aware is not just becoming totally aware of ourselves. It is becoming aware of the self that is beyond our personality, beyond what is encapsulated in our skin. The true connectivity, the true interconnection that we have means that we are all one body and we do all participate on this planet and all the realms that are seen and unseen associated with it and beyond. And part of being mindful is not just being in touch with our suffering, with our contractions, with our hindrances, which I think sometimes people misunderstand as the directive that Buddhist practice invites us to focus on. And we can get lost in all the universe that is who we are as individuals. And forget about the cost that other creatures pay so that we can just simply live our lives. So, keeping the springtime in mind and the rebirth in mind and the cost that it takes to keep us in our day-to-day somewhat satisfied lives, friends and I decided it was the perfect time in mid-March to go out to a gentleman's boutique goat ranch in West Marin. What a delightful way to spend a Sunday, right? So we go out, we travel to Tamales. We sign up for a tour. We pay our $10. And we are there at the goat farm just in time for all the kids to be born. Some of them are just born. Some of them have been born a couple weeks ago. And it was very, very interesting. The door of perception always is available to us if we invited, or even if we don't invite it, it will open itself and walk us through it so that we can have a further understanding and deeper mindfulness into the impact that we have and the relationship that we have with other beings. So first we went through the fields and we saw all the goats that were behind the cyclone fence. And then they took us into the birthing barn where mothers were there with their young ones. And the rest of the team moved through there and went on to look at the brand new milking barn and the farmhouse that was being made into a mansion. And the owners, he's a surgeon at UCSF and she's a psychologist, and they live in Potrero Hill. But they invested in this place and it was huge, and it's obviously something that they want to make into a business. And we don't think about it because sometimes we love to have goat cheese and goat milk. It's like there's got to be some things in the world that aren't associated with sacrifice and suffering, right? That we can just enjoy. And this is not a story that is intended to take away your joy of goat cheese. Or to, you know, make you feel guilty about things. This is simply, if we can drop our judgment, it's so much easier to really see things as they really are. And to be open to it. And to just understand. We don't have to build armies and figure out ways to change things. We just need to be with what is. So as they toured the farm, I stayed with the goats in the birthing pen. And I found one little pen that had a mother in it and two tiny little babies. They were a day old. They were twins. And I took one of their pails and turned it upside down and sat there in their birthing pen with them. And just felt very, very good about being in that wonderful, natural, nurturing environment. So at one point, I couldn't resist. I picked up the little girl, a day-old little kid, goatling. And as I picked her up, she, of course, bleated. And as she bleated, her mom, whose name is Fairy Bell, bleated to her as a sign. These are how goats communicate, that they are there for each other. But the mother looked not at her, but at me. She looked deep into my eyes. And in that moment, when our eyes met, she told me a very sad story of her life. She has to have kids every year so that she can give milk all the time. And her kids get taken away when they're 8 days old. And 50% of the newborn kids get taken away to the butchers at 8 days old so that we have more milk for production of goat cheese. And so that the owners who invested in this property can make it a viable business. I never knew this. It just, as I was holding this little girl, realizing in a week she was going to be dead, it just struck me. So I didn't realize until we drove home that I had made a contract with Fairy Bell. I live in Mill Valley. I live in a neighborhood. But on the way home, I decided that I was going to pick them up a day before they were supposed to go to the butchers, and I was going to rescue them. Now, this is no heroic gesture because it's kind of like a Sophie's Choice. There's just two, whereas there were about 30 others that were going. So it wasn't. It was a symbolic thing. It was 2 days before daylight savings time and a week before the spring equinox, and it felt like it was an appropriate thing to do for this time of the year, to somehow or other dip into the cycle of what the animals are experiencing, not just the fact that they give birth, but their whole meaning for being alive in the context of human society. And since I can't save all the animals, I can at least practice on a day-to-day basis, on a moment-to-moment basis, as it turns out, remembering the sacrifice and the suffering of creatures by tending to these little guys. And that felt to me like a practice that I was willing to commit to, even though I didn't really know how I was going to do it. So from that moment of making that commitment, I found support and help in the process of having it come about. A friend of mine offered to drive me in her car. She works at a cat clinic. She knew some clients at the cat clinic who had this huge dog crate for their borzoi, and they often loaned it out to people who needed large crates, and they were very happy to loan me that crate. I had a downstairs unit that is kind of unfinished, and the kitchen has an old linoleum floor, and so I had a way of picking them up, I had a way of transporting them, I had a way of housing them, and the farm gave me a huge bale of straw and their first inoculation. So last Saturday, they were 5 weeks old. And last Sunday, we've been together for 4 weeks. And everything about it has unfolded on a moment-to-moment, day-to-day basis, because there's no way of planning, although I have worried. But worrying doesn't get you very far, although there's lots of little details you have to think through. But everything about their presence in this house in Mill Valley in the neighborhood has been a gift, unexpectedly. My neighborhood, as many of you might know because of your experience, is full of people who are neighbors but who don't really talk to each other. Now, all of a sudden, all the kids are at my house after school, meeting with each other, the parents are there, the fathers have offered to build a goat house for me because they're rapidly getting too big for the crate. Other people come with their dogs, with their kids, with their whatever, so we go romping through the woods together. And it has been a way of bringing humanity to us. So animals, when we have a certain relationship to them, and a certain understanding and a certain respect for their beauty, for their poetry, for their wit, when they are not herded, when they are not dumbed down so that they can be managed to just provide us with the things that we need from them, are actually such full, beautiful, sentient beings. And everybody is getting to be mindful of that just a little more by being in contact with these little twins. So there was a time, a long time ago, when you mentioned Buddhism, now meditation and mindfulness is very popular and everybody's doing it. But there was a time around the beatniks, you know, when they were starting to read Buddhist texts and do drugs and kind of do that kind of far out stuff, when people said, oh, meditation, it's like navel gazing. And sometimes I do believe, although navel gazing is not an accurate description of what mindfulness practice is, that we can get lost in our own story, in our own experience. Get a little, you know, little, get that scope, that perspective a little too reduced. We're just working on ourselves. We're paying attention to this reaction. We're paying attention to this hope. We're noticing this response. We know when we're hungry. We know when we've eaten the right things. We know when we haven't eaten the right things. We know when we brushed our teeth. We know when we forgot to wash our feet. We're just so over-focused on ourselves. And it's appropriate to become very, very familiar with our conditioning and our habits and our moment-to-moment processes. But it's also good to begin to expand that awareness and understand the effect and the impact that we have on others. The people who we meet on the street, our close intimates, our family, the people we work with. And I know that we are very conscious environmentalists. We know the impact that we have on the land. We know that we've turned many, many beautiful places into parking lots, taken paradise and turned it into a parking lot. And I know that we're aware that we cause a lot of injury to creatures when we try to make them exclusively serve our needs. But I don't think that we really give ourselves a chance to expand in that place too much, because there is such a tendency to close down and become very self-aware, self-involved. And even though it's good to be mindful of all the processes and conditions that go on in ourselves, it's also good to stretch out and become more spacious. One of the great, great, great reliefs of leaving the city and going out to nature is that we can open up and be fed by the beautiful natural cycles that have been going on since the beginning of time on this planet, and that we are an absolute part of. There's no way we can separate out from it, and there is no way that we don't get affected by the suffering that we cause. At some subtle level, it is always present in all of us. In some way, we're always noting it. It might even be part of what makes us anxious and restless and unhappy. That at a deep, deep, subtle place, we are aware that it takes a 2-month rains retreat to take our heavy footprint off of this planet. For just a little while, not only do we get a chance to concentrate and get quiet and become still, but we give everything else a chance to rejuvenate because of not having such an immediate and impactful relationship with us. So I think this is part of the message of spring. And even the Jesus myth, the Christ myth, you know, the sacrifice before the resurrection, the sacrifice for the purpose of salvation. There are many, many, many creatures that sacrifice themselves for our salvation being our comfort, getting the things that we want when we want them, at the price that we demand. So, in many, many aspects of Buddhism, especially in that aspect called engaged Buddhism, when the point is to really expand one's awareness, understand the impact that we have, the theme is not to be judging, not to feel guilty, not even necessarily to change the patterns of our behavior, but just to invite an expanded awareness of the influence and the impact that we have, that we exert whether we're awake or asleep. That is there if we leave one light bulb on in the kitchen that we forgot to turn off. That is there when we ignore somebody who's in the middle of the street begging for some food or pennies. The influence that we have in the Middle East because we need to drive cars so much. And the condition of the people and the animals and nature there. So it's kind of like a way of acknowledging that there is an eternal cycle of death and rebirth, And in the context, in the large, large, large frame of things, nothing is born and nothing dies. But in the relative frame of things, we are born and we die with every breath. And we have an impact on ourselves and everything around us with every breath. And if we can carry that expanded awareness with us more of the time, I think that our decisions, as well as our hearts and the conditions of our whole beings, will be tempered by it, will be softened, sensitized, strengthened. And our intention every morning when we wake up will be sharper, purified. Our understanding of who we are will be clarified when we know and can see in detail the impact that we have being alive. We have many, 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 many things to be grateful for. All the things that sustain and support our being alive. And some of the things that we can be grateful for, or let's say appreciative of, are the sacrifices that are made for the sake of our being alive and our having comforts and needs that are fulfilled for the most part so easily. Everything is so available. But there is a price to be paid, if not by us, then by others. And when others pay a price for our lives, we pay a price in a subtle way too. So part of what we are doing when we are suffering is dealing with those elements that are sacrificed for our benefit that we somehow are not aware of or have turned our backs to, not intentionally, but just by conforming with the ease of society, because society is quite easeful with making sacrifice, as long as the most of us stay happy and manageable. So that's my message for the springtime, Easter period. And I think that we're still in it because those lucky school kids are still on spring break. So I invite any comments or any questions or anything you would like to. Yeah. Yes. Except it's true, except that the calves get taken the first day. And I want you to know those mothers, they suffer. Because I heard that fairy bell crying as I took her kids away. Crying deeply, deeply. And then they go straight to the milking barn where machines, they go from little, the firstborn, to machines. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Oh, well, the little girl... I'm so in love with them. I have to give them. I'm not going to keep them. I can't keep them. But there's going to be another 3 months before they're weaned. And they're already like, it's going to be a trip. So the little girl is a beautiful alpine. She's cream and beige and brown and black. And she has a black stripe. So she has two little white saddles. And when I met her, she was a day old. And I noticed that she had three beige circles on her white saddles, and so reminded me of the Buddhist canon, which is sometimes referred to as a Tripitaka, the three baskets. And so I named her Tripitaka because I thought she's going to be a trippy little girl. As it turns out, as she has grown up, so far 5 weeks old, they've all kind of blended or erased or added, so her name is now Taka, but her esoteric name is Tripitaka. The little boy was not thriving. He was just curled up in a circle, and he looked creamy white, and there was an essence of sweetness that emanated from him at a day old that was tangible. And so his name is Toffee, because he's very much like vanilla saltwater toffee. But his nickname is Toff Toff. They really are hilarious. They leap straight up into the air. They're curious about everything. They've got genuinely sweet natures. They are inseparable. They have a relationship with each other that is amazing. Of course, I'm their mom, so they follow me everywhere, but they're not allowed in the house. And also, I have a lot of gardens. So we're learning. Ironically, the one plant that they dive for and can't be dissuaded from is rhododendron, which is toxic to them. So I went online and I realized brandy is, if they get poisoned, then you feed them brandy. So I have a bottle of brandy in my house now, but they're okay. Yeah. It's a day to day, moment to moment thing. It's a commitment. If you open yourself up to something that's unexpected, that you don't know how you're going to do it, but you made a commitment. And so it's got to work. Doors open, resources show up, things happen. And it's a wonderful way to really include mindfulness in your day-to-day life, because you just can't go to sleep on it. I have to feed them 4 or 5 times a day. So I go back and forth from my office, and I have to get up at 6 o'clock because they have a routine. And their last feeding is at 7:30, so I have to be home when they need what they need. So mindfulness has been more deeply embedded into my moment-to-moment routine that way. It's especially true when you take on something that is unexpected and you don't know how you're going to do it. So I invite people to deepen, sharpen your mindfulness by doing something that you never expected you would ever, ever do. Or take on a little responsibility for the well-being of others. It's a good thing. It's also a form of service, which is a big part of Buddhist practice. You know, when you commit to something and you follow through with it, no matter if it's tricky or difficult or you don't know how, it's a form of service. Answers come. Any questions about your practice, about the Dharma? Anybody come back from retreat and have a wonderful experience integrating back into what they call normal life? Yeah? No? Okay. So let's just sit here for a moment and do some metta practice, beginning with ourselves and then going to the ever larger rings of sentient beings. We just have a few minutes. Actually, just a few minutes. So, now let's just take another moment and return to that inner stillness. And let's just begin with wishing peace and well-being for ourselves. May we be peaceful. May we be warm and soft, hearted towards ourselves, first of all. And then with this breath, let's extend that sensation to those immediately and closely around us, our nearest and dearest, whatever species they might be. May they be peaceful. May they know comfort and joy and ease of being. And now let's extend that sensation to people that we work with or just meet in the streets on our way to and fro. May those circles of individuals be peaceful, warm, gentle-hearted. May they be filled with well-being. And now let's expand that circle to the whole city. Knowing that there are some individuals there that we're not that comfortable with. Individuals there that we know quite well. Individuals that we will never, never encounter. And everything in between. May they be peaceful. May they find their true heartedness. Ease, comfort of being. And now let's expand that to this country. And the various and different productivity and turmoil and confusion, as well as creativity and generosity and wisdom that one might find in anybody, anywhere in this country. May they all find peacefulness and ease of being. May the windows and doors of new possibilities open and shed light on their path. And now let's really, really expand and include this whole planet and all the creatures on it, in it, through it, around it, whatever species they might be. May they extend their awareness to each other and become better partners, more compassionate, more sensitive. May all creatures, great and small, be peaceful, warm in their hearts and bodies, enjoying easefulness in their lives. And may we all enjoy the comfort that comes with understanding. May we avoid the pain and sorrow that sometimes visits us in life. May all beings be happy. May all beings avoid suffering. And may we all finally enjoy that sense of well-being which is beyond the conditions of joy and sorrow, which is permanent, ever-present, all-existent, was there from the beginning of time and before, permeates every moment of this thing we call being alive, and will persist even after the end of time, because it is absolute. May we all touch that knowledge, realize that experience.
So whoever teaches here at Mission Dharma, whether it's Howie or Yvonne or someone else substituting for Howie, offers the teaching freely out of generosity. And you're welcome to offer your generosity in the form of teacher Donna for Yvonne tonight in the teacher Donna basket or room rental Donna. We have a $150 a week room rental fee. And you can make a tax-deductible donation for room rental by making a check out to St. John the Evangelist Church with Mission Dharma in the memo line. And thanks for coming. Be safe. Good night.
I've got to come over and see the kids.
Got to see the kids.
Yeah, we'll bring Jesse.
Bring Jesse. People come with their dogs. We have a lot of fun.